I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. Three women, one podcast, and a whole load of badass. With me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. This week, we're talking about the Alabama abortion laws and the abortion laws in Northern Ireland. We learn why women are so disinclined to invest their money. And we talk to Evina Lamnissos, CEO of the Eve Appeal, about why the femcare market is out of control. Underwear, armpit hair, many
imitators, but no one compares. Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio. One, two, three, four!
So, starting off, let's talk about what has happened in Alabama this week. If you have missed this news, and I don't really know how you can because it feels like it's been everywhere, this week the Alabama government essentially voted to outlaw abortion, to make it impossible for women to obtain an abortion, to make it impossible for women to obtain an abortion if they had been raped, if they have been victims of incest, and also to make it illegal as a doctor to perform an abortion. What do we think, Nat?
First of all, that's what I give this, because it in 2019 we're in a position where 25 men can determine the fate of a whole host of women, and their argument is that a fetus from 6 weeks is entitled to the right of life. And so the punishment for that is to potentially take the life of another woman, because what generally happens when you restrict these things is people turn to illegal forms of practice.
And so, what we know is that in countries where abortion is illegal, as many abortions take place.
Yes.
They're just not done in safe situations.
Exactly. And the people doing them are generally men. So either way, men are profiteering from this. What I haven't heard any of those 25 men say is that there'll be any punishment for the men involved. So there's no punishment for a man that chooses not to wear a condom. And it's a harsher, I've read this, I will need to check, but it's a harsher punishment for a woman that has an abortion versus a man that rapes a woman.
Yeah.
And so the man that rapes a woman, it basically is a bit like, well, fine, but the woman's the one that's going to jail if she has an abortion.
7 years versus life.
It's just which for me is basically fine, yeah, whatever. It's that's how it feels. It's like saying whatever to raping woman, but actually the woman who, you know, is completely the innocent party in this is the one that goes to jail. I just do not understand how any of this is even happening. The bill, if I'm right, has not actually been signed into law.
No.
So there is hope.
Yes, fingers crossed.
There is hope, but I am not hopeful.
So in order for the bill to be signed into law, it would have to essentially go up against something that is called Roe v. Wade, which is the kind of landmark, I think it was a 1956 case that made abortion legal in the United States, yeah. And it's protected by the Supreme Court. So it would have to go all the way, really, you could challenge it all the way to the Supreme Court. But the length of time that is going to take mm-hmm. is not going to work for the women who are involved in that challenge.
Yeah.
And what really, when I saw this, what really upset me about it so much was I saw there were so many women talking about this, talking about how it feels like it is men ruling over our bodies, how it feels like we have no say in what happens to our bodies. Mm. And I saw so many women standing up and saying, do you know what? me too, I have had an abortion. Mm-hmm. You know, saying, actually putting themselves up there and saying, you know me, right? That it was this hashtag, you know me, which is, I have had an abortion. And then somebody pointed out it's women saying that.
Mm.
Because do you know what? If you know a woman who has had an abortion, then you know a man who knows a woman who has had an abortion.
Exactly, yes.
One in four women have had an abortion, which means one in four men have had an abortion, essentially, mm-hmm. by proxy.
Mm-hmm.
And where were the men talking mm-hmm. about this? Where were the men saying, actually, do you know what? My career probably would not be where it is
mm-hmm.
if I had been forced to be a dad at 16, or if my mistress had given birth to the baby that I asked her to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at several US senators. Like, those are men whose lives have been positively impacted by a woman having an abortion. Why are they not talking about it? Where are you guys?
Which is the call for men to get involved
yeah.
and stand up and say something. The reason why I sigh is on all of this, it's taken women to stand up and say,
yeah.
this is not right. Even the things that affect men, it's women standing up and saying this. And I'm actually white men specifically, because yeah. there were no yeah. black men that were involved in this.
No, it's 25 white men.
It's always us. It's tiring. It's absolutely tiring. And it's a constant, constant attack. And so for anyone thinking, but it's just one state, other states that have also passed restrictive bans are Arkansas, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, North Dakota, and Ohio. They are being challenged in the courts. But as Harriet says, yeah.
the impact is on women now.
It's going to take a long time.
Yeah,
but isn't part of their driver to get it to the Supreme Court, isn't it, so that they can? But
they want to overturn Roe v. Wade, yeah. basically. That's the goal. But you know, and the second one state gets to a point where it looks like that might happen, mm-hmm. then essentially you'll see probably all 50 states, maybe not all of them, but the vast majority of them do this. And
well, it'll be the this is we discussed it on the show last week. Part of the pro-life anti-choice movement is religious
yeah.
and so it's the states that have a really strong religious base, and that also equates Trump's strongest supporters, base supporters
yeah.
That also equates to Republicans. So there are some states New York
yeah.
for example, where it's highly unlikely, and they're one of the states that actually use their local legislation to overturn some of the federal bills that Trump has signed. So when he does an executive order, they're using their power to overturn them. The challenge with it going to the Supreme Court is that Trump made a recent appointment, and so to the Supreme Court, and so we're not in a position where we have the balance of people that will actually overturn this. If it gets to the Supreme Court,
yeah, it's a real danger of it.
Yeah, a very real possibility.
But then we're living with that in Northern Ireland, because a lot of yeah. this conversation, people were going, well, this is great, guys, but this is what we're having to deal with in Northern Ireland. So
Northern Ireland, it's life imprisonment for a woman who has an abortion. I think it's similar for a doctor who performs it. And Northern Ireland is a part of the UK. So everywhere else in the UK, we get free, legal, safe, clean access to this. It is part of our healthcare. Except in Northern Ireland, which we've just conveniently forgotten about. So I remember last year when I'm incredibly emotional at the Repeal the Eighth mm-hmm. movement in Ireland, where we saw all of these people, all the Irish people who were living outside of Ireland, flooding back. People were buying them air tickets so they could go and vote mm-hmm. to Repeal the Eighth, which is essentially to allow abortion in Ireland. And everyone forgot that, yeah, Ireland was now fine, but Northern Ireland wasn't.
Mm.
That we live in a country that does this to women is... it makes me want to cry with anger. It makes me so angry that we can live in a country which says it's okay for us to believe that we have power over another woman's body. What is that?
So what do we do?
Well, so some good things that we can do. So there are some fantastic organisations that have been set up in the US, but there are also some in the UK, and I'll get names, which specifically help fund women in Northern Ireland who need to come to the UK for an abortion. So they'll fund their travel, stay, they'll look after them. You can write to your MP mm-hmm. and talk about this. You can write to Parliament and talk about it. You can donate to organisations in the States which are specifically trying to support women through this area. And you can just stand up and have honest conversations with people. That's the one thing I think we can do. We can have an honest conversation and say it's not okay for this to go unpassed.
But I think the next thing that then floats in my mind is, well, where do we start? Do you start with Northern Ireland, or do you keep raging at, I guess, a reversal, a regression in the US?
Yeah.
Where?
So I think for me, it feels like, so the thing that was shocking to me was that I sort of knew that about Northern Ireland, but I just didn't think it was that bad.
It wasn't front of mind.
It wasn't front of mind. And also like, well, I'm sure it's, you know, how hard is it to get on a ferry when you're however many months pregnant and feeling terrible? Yeah. And it wasn't front of mind. And I think in the UK, we have a legitimate thing to say, do you know what? We have let the women of Northern Ireland down. Mm. We have let them down and we have to do better. That doesn't mean that we don't have to also be angry about what's going on in the States, because we know that the cultural changes that happen in the US impact on our cultural behaviour across the UK and Europe. But we have to take some affirmative action about Northern Ireland right now, because this is not okay.
And so again, it's what does that look like? Because we can, I feel that every week we as women are annoyed, upset, frustrated, angry because the men are doing something. And I'm distilling it down to simple common denominators here. And I feel that they have stopped listening because it's just like noise. A bit like in a heterosexual married couple where the wife just nags and the husband just blocks it out. I think they're doing that on a mass scale. They are literally blocking it out and going ahead and pursuing anyway. And so I don't always know if the groundswell of noise makes them listen. So there must be another way.
So if you're in Northern Ireland, one of the things you can do, and this is obviously entirely up to you, but you could not vote for the DUP. So the DUP, who are currently hold the balance of power in Northern Ireland and in the UK Parliament, are strongly anti-abortion.
But what's the alternative?
Great question. I don't know. To have to check with
is
them.
Is it not Sinn Féin?
No.
Okay.
You can also give money to the Abortion Support Network, who support women in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. And you can... I think we do have to make noise about it. I think if we forget that this is happening in Northern Ireland and we forget that Northern Ireland is part of the UK, then we end up in situations like Brexit, where we suddenly have a whole problem about exiting the EU because we forgot that Northern Ireland was part of the UK.
But we're not engaging men on this, though. Like, we can keep making noise, but you're right when you said it earlier. All the noise that I've seen on Twitter and my social feeds, and there's been some really brilliant posts, like educational posts, there are, I think I can count probably three posts from men, or things that people have shared that are from men. So we're not engaging them. And I don't understand why they don't think that this conversation is relevant. Or is it just because it's not happening to their bodies, so therefore they don't care? But it's we've got to find a way to engage men on this conversation.
Nat?
I completely agree we've got to find ways to engage men in this conversation. But I do feel like they are shutting it out because it's not happening to them. And so forget politics for a moment. What are the other ways? And listeners, I'm calling out to you. What are the other ways that we have facilitated change over the years, politics aside? How have we shifted things when things were fundamentally wrong? Other than protesting and riots, some of you might be thinking back to, you know, miners' strikes and other things. That was still politics involved. Have we ever changed anything by not engaging in politics or not engaging politicians?
Do you know who we need on this? We need the brilliant Gina Martin, who did the upskirting campaign.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because she just got everyone on board with that. Everyone went, do you know what? This is a ridiculous thing.
Did men get on board with that, though?
Not to, like, you know, all men. Not hashtag not all men, but some of them, yeah. And she co-ran that campaign with a man, so who stepped back and let her take all the credit for it. Who was like, "No, what? This is your idea, your campaign. But yeah, I helped facilitate it, but it's not my
maybe that's
not my thing
need.
To take."
I know this isn't a helpful comment, but my brain then went, "Well, if there were more women in power," and I know that that is also not true because there are some women.
And the governor of Alabama is a woman and she signed this into effect.
So that doesn't change much. I don't feel very hopeful right now. Listeners, I'm crying. Aww. I'm crying internally.
Give us some help. I've seen you on this show ever.
Do you know what? I feel really, I will say as a woman, all this week I really noticed how tired I felt. And I said, do you know what? I feel tired because I feel beaten up by the world this week.
Yeah.
that is how this bill has made me feel.
Yeah.
The Fempire Strikes Back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
Now, what do you do with your spare cash at the end of the month if you're lucky enough to have some? Are you blowing it on a big night out? Can do some shopping? Is anyone actually investing it? No, not me. Ladies, either of you doing any investing?
I'm micro-investing.
What does that mean?
Passively.
Is that the thing where you can like round up your...
Yeah,
so I use... You spend 99p and the money takes the 1p somewhere.
And I'm investing through that. So I have a LISA. But I've had ISAs over the years and I put money in them and then I empty them for a holiday. Yeah, yeah. So,
it's just delayed savings,
yeah,
isn't
basically.
It?
Basically. Yeah.
Emma, what about you? You're quite into your money management. Do you actually invest?
I'm quite into my money management. I'm trying to get better with my money because I saw a financial advisor a couple of years ago because I was like, right, I know what I want my future to look like. And, you know, I had a minimum pension through some works and I'd set up my business. So I'd not been paying in anything. So those first couple of years in business, you need all the money. And, you know, she did my whole plan. She's like, what do you need? Basically, I need to put away £100,000 a year for the next 10 years to have the kind of lifestyle that I want. So I am definitely trying to save the money.
Well, here to help us, we have Tamara Gillen from the Wealthy Her Network. Tamara, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You have released a big report this week, which looks at how women feel about and invest their money. And one of the things that came out of it that was really interesting to me is that you really noticed a difference between women who felt confident in themselves and how they thought about money and women who maybe were suffering from a bit of self-confidence issues or didn't have a lot of self-esteem and their behavior. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Absolutely. So there are some clear differences between men and women. We found that. We talked to 2,500 men and women. Women across the board, which did break my heart, did have issues with confidence and self-esteem. But women who are less confident are less engaged with money, with finance. And in fact, women as a whole are less engaged and less confident with finance. But we found some really interesting dynamics. So even some badass, amazing female entrepreneurs who'd sold their companies didn't feel confident when engaging with finance that was around their investments because they didn't want to show that they didn't know. So they didn't want to go into those situations and say, I don't know. And in fact, that is a trend that is across all types of women. And it's something that we have to change. And it's one of the reasons why I started Wealthy Her was because I'm an entrepreneur. I actually lost my first business over 10 years ago because I didn't understand finance and money. I didn't engage with it in the way that I should. And I thought, let's change that. And I also, I love the statistic, which is by 2025, 60% of the UK's wealth will be in the hands of women, which I love as a juxtaposition to your earlier conversation, because money is power, but we have to, you know, help women to look at how and where they invest that to maximise possibilities for themselves, the families and their future.
But I also think building on that, if 60% of money and wealth will be in the hands of women, then we need to spend it with women as well, because that's how we essentially build up our portfolio of wealth and I guess keep the money with us versus spending it with businesses that don't care about us or that don't listen to us.
Absolutely. And I think another interesting thing that came out in the report is 67% of women, well, 60% of women want to use their wealth to protect and secure the lives and comfort for their family, which is, and then also education for their family. But 67% want to use it for social impact.
Yeah.
And a key part of that is actually are the companies that they're investing in diverse, which is a great thing. So not only is wealth shifting, but then women want to do better with their money for society, but also for other women, which I think is a great thing. And of course, it needs to make good commercial sense. It can't just be it's good, you know, good for good, but also for growth as well.
Yeah.
I also think what I notice is as a woman is the opportunities to spend our money on versus men. And men seem to, I'm presuming it's nurture, they spend their money on things that actually accumulate over time or give them their money back. So they will invest in watches. What's the first big spend that a guy normally has that will be on a watch? But guaranteed, when he gets tired of that watch, he'll sell it secondhand to somebody else who wants that watch and he'll make just as much back. Or they're buying very fancy cars. So it's like men have the opportunities to invest, and I just feel like women get bombarded with stuff to spend our money on, but that money doesn't come back to us.
And that was my point around, if 60% is with us, then we can make different decisions. But I think that's part of the I guess the what's happened in society over time, because when men were head of the household and they were buying the property and they were buying the house, they were buying the assets to secure the family and to secure the future of the family, and the women were buying the things that go in it, so all of the small things that are more disposable. And I think the flip side of this, and potentially one of the upsides of lots of single women running around town, because there are more of us these days, is that we are investing in those assets. But what we're not thinking about are things that what other investments look like and how we increase our wealth and potentially take a bit more risk. We've spoken about investing on the show before, and actually just the risk level in terms of women and what they will back, the appetite is lower. But when we do invest, we invest well. But once we get it, we invest well. And I think our returns are generally better than men.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we see that. And you also see that in women-led companies. But the thing is that women are, they want more information. So they start out being, they lack confidence. Yep. So they're not as engaged, but then they need more information because they are risk aware. So they need more information to invest. Yep. But when they do get education and confidence in their investments, they invest well and they can drive growth. So we do see that trend, and it's really important therefore that we engage more women within the industry, you know, within finance and investing, and then also give them education about how they make their money, you know, put their money to best use.
So how do we get the education? Because for the, I think for most people, you get your first slice of financial education from your bank. So banks, do they get it? Are they doing the work that they need to do?
They are starting to. I think everybody within the industry is starting to say, what can we do differently? So there was a big, you know, and there's different levels of that. And absolutely, it is criminal that you can leave university and you do not know about basic finances or financial management. And that probably needs to change. But the industry is starting to say, where can they make the biggest difference? You know, there is, you know, the Rose Review recently came out, which said there is a 250 million economy deficit, because a billion actually, because women are not being backed as entrepreneurs. So the banking community is making a big shift to say, how do we educate women? How do we go to women where they are? How do we create networks that aren't in the evening when they are playing a disproportionate role with children like I am? So, you know, they are trying to say, how do they educate? And then there is a number of things that are coming out just privately of people saying, how can they do? So I've seen, you know, finance retreats for women, which actually looks like something previously you'd think, oh no, please, that sounds awful. But you think, actually, that looks quite good, you know, to go for the day, be in a setting where you can talk to other women. And that's the other thing that we found. Women want to talk to other women and say, because actually you can almost demystify it between yourselves and say, have you got an ISA? How did your ISA work? Rather than going and sitting in front of a professional where you're like, I just don't want to ask the stupid questions. I don't want to appear like I don't know. And I don't have a clue. And that was the other thing in the report. We had these amazing women. So we had a big focus group. We had many focus group sessions, but we had top entrepreneurs, we had women from within the finance industry, and even women within the finance industry who were hugely successful were like, I don't get involved in our finances. I defer to my husband. You just think, you know, if they're not engaged, then there really is a big problem. And then we need to sort of start those conversations.
Okay, we're going to keep talking about this and try and find out some ways that we can get more engaged. That's coming up next here on Badass Women's Hour XL.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
She'll get you talking.
Welcome back to Badass Women's Hour XL. We are talking about money. We've got Tamara Gillen, founder of the Wealthy Her Network, in the studio with us. And just before the break, we were talking about why women feel so sort of uncomfortable investing. And off air, I was saying that I feel like I'm a bit of a financial failure because I live my financial life based on what is in my bank account right now. So I look at my bank account and I go, oh my gosh, I've got my rent coming out, I've got my electricity bill coming out, and there isn't enough money in there. How do I put more money into it? Even though more money might go in, I might get paid, but I'm literally looking at it right now and panicking. Tamara, what are the basics that we should all be doing in order to be better money managers?
And I am so not an expert in this, and I am so a terrible example as my own self, which is probably why I've created the Wealthy Her Network. But I think there are a number of tools now that you can engage with as a consumer that say, how do you manage your money? See where things are going. As you were saying, with your kind of micro investing, just skimming off the top little things to make investments. I do think, to your example around seeing from a financial planning, I think that's really important. I certainly need to go. I must go. I must leave here, book that for Monday to actually start planning ahead and looking at the ways that I can. I think you can engage with your bank as well, because they want to have those conversations.
Yeah, I just want to go back to the bank because I've had a recent experience. We're talking a lot, the insights in your report and what we can do to help women. But I think the financial industry has a lot to do to support. I've actually filed a complaint with one of the big banks about their unconscious bias, because I think as women, especially business owners, you know, it's more challenging for us to be risky. And I wanted to get an overdraft for my business. And I spoke to the bank and I spoke to a guy and he interrogated me about my business. And I was in I think I'm going to have a cash flow gap. This overdraft is going to be quite important. And he absolutely grilled me. Are you sure you need the money? I don't think we can give you the money. What I don't want to do is give you the money, because we give money to businesses and they just burn through it straight away. So I was like, so you're telling me that you will give businesses that are riskier than mine this money, but for some reason you're giving me a big hoo-ha, wanted me to send reports. I ended up hanging up on him because I was just like, this is not helpful. This is not helping me build my business. 2 weeks later, I had another call with a female bank manager. She said, absolutely no problem. Your credit history on your account is great. Yep, we can get that signed off today. So I said, well, hang on a minute. How come I've had to put up with this guy? And to me, that is unconscious bias, because he is over-challenging me on my business, not encouraging me to invest in my business.
Mate, it's not unconscious. It's just bias.
It's just bias.
Just bias.
Just bias. But the challenge is, if you are trying to be, we've already got a cultural challenge to take more risks. And then if you're having conversations with people that have a bias and are trying not to let you take risks, then it doesn't matter how ambitious you are with being wealthier, if you're actively being stopped or hindered or patronized by these financial institutes. Sorry, I'm quite angry about that.
So this is what one area where I do think having more women does make the difference. And so picking up the phone and speaking to a female business banking and lending manager, or having networks of female investors that back other women, I do think it makes a difference, because we look for different things and the questions that we ask are completely different. And we, in terms of risk, again, we're not thinking about yes, it is about growth, but I think we just think about a wider portfolio of what success looks like for a business. And so I do think us cultivating those networks specifically within business is the only way that we can go. And banks need to get on board. I think NatWest have pledged that they're going to bring on board, I'm going to get the figure wrong, 10,000 female business advisors?
They have, and that's off the back of the Rose Review. And for to that very reason is the fact that, you know, women do feel that they've got to overcome to confidence to go and ask for money. They do not ask for money in the same way. And in fact, the Rose Review is asking banks, and a number have signed up, to sign up to the Code of Conduct, which actually demonstrates of commercial banking loans what percentage are going to women and what are going to men. So it's a good move, because it's starting to look at the numbers and say, let's put it in numbers, because then we can understand what's happening. To your point, women want to see more women. They want, whether on whatever level, whether that's wealth management, private banking, or that is commercial banking or retail banking, they want to see more women advisors who look like them, that talk and understand the realities of their life and their needs. I mean, I had a ridiculous conversation after I got divorced with my mortgage company, who was saying, oh, actually, you have been paying the mortgage throughout your divorce, but in fact, because you're a single mother, we're going, that actually works against you, and we cannot let you renew your mortgage at the same level, which was just deeply infuriating. And so those things are there. But I do think, you know, some of, and I'm, you know, I some of the biggest banks have signed up to Wealthier because they do want to change. They are listening and saying, what is it that we need to do? And that's what the report was about, to say, let's start by understanding, what do women want? What are we getting wrong? Yes, it's jargon, not going to them, you know, not listening to what they need, and then having this bias. And then how do we change it? And there is a real need for change, but there is a commitment to that change.
If we go to the data, do we have data on the numbers of women that default on things like mortgages, loans, business loans versus men? Because financially, if you put it in front of a bank and say, backing women means you get your money back, versus actually when you back men, you don't, that would be useful. And I feel like it sort of does exist.
Do you know what's interesting about it is that it might exist, but they probably wouldn't be allowed to use it, because they used to do this with car insurance. So you used to get a better deal on your car insurance if you're a woman, because women had fewer accidents.
And it's discrimination.
And it's discrimination against men.
But you're right, that data would be... the thing is, the banks do have access to that data. They just can't make it public,
they can't use it.
No, and they do have access to, and the facts are clear. If people invest or in more diverse businesses or female-led business, there's a higher return on equity, there's a higher growth. So diversity pays, you know, commercially. Those numbers exist. They're very, very public. But you're right, you do not see actually women are better at paying, you know,
Sheila's wheels.
Loans.
Sheila's wheels, we had to go.
Do we have time to... I want to discuss something. 1 in 10 women say they would need at least 5 million to feel wealthy. Why 5 million?
I do not know. And that was more than men. Men felt they needed much less to feel wealthy.
Really?
I don't know. And if you also look at women more than men, it's about security. So it's about, you know, security. And it isn't just they're not thinking of just themselves. They're thinking of those that are dependent on them.
Yeah, I bet they're London women, because they'd be like, right, 3 million,
it's just
buy a
house.
Nice house.
Exactly.
That's it. And then you've got 2 million to invest. So you would need 5 million.
One of the things that came out in the report is that actually women are less likely than men to put money as a priority for them. So is that kind of why we are less engaged with it? It's just... doesn't come on our priorities list.
I think in the report it found that men, the actual financial success was actually a marker of their ultimate achievement much more than women. So it's almost like it's not, whereas women it was about what it creates for them. So it was about, what can I do with my money, which is about independence, you know, comfort for my family, education for my family.
But then also, I suppose it's role models, right? Because guys talk about it. The amount of times I've ended up gate crashing conversation where guys are talking about, you know, the stock exchange apps that they're on, or, you know, they just seem to talk about, you know, compounding interest. Like, they just seem to be on it. Because if your role models are talking about it, where I don't have any female role models in my life that I've spoken to about finance, well, apart from Natalie, who's like,
I mean, spending it.
Who likes to spend it. But, you know, my financial advisor, who was a woman, was the first time that I really sat down and really thought about it. I mean, you know, you have pension chats at work, but I haven't got, you know, there's nobody in my life that is actively investing or talking about shares or
women don't talk about it.
Portfolios of investment. Like, I don't know anybody doing that stuff. Mm.
So the woman I know who has probably the best kind of relationship with investment and money.
I know she is.
She has that because when she was young, her dad used to drive her to school.
Yes.
And her dad was a businessman and he had lots of investments. And every day on their drive to school, he would get her to read out the share prices in the FT. And so because she did that every day, she started to understand the language of it. She understood what it meant to go up and go down. She understood where the money came from and what created it. And that drove her interest in it. But if it had been her mum driving her to school every day, she wouldn't have had that conversation because her dad was the one who looked after the money in the house. He understood where the money was invested. He understood what was happening with it. And this to me is like this fascinating little piece of just social engineering there, which is putting the person that is that has that knowledge with all of your kids.
Yeah, but then I've also got to look back at my life, and I have not been ready to invest until now, because for a long time I wasn't earning much money and I wanted to buy all the crap. And you there's a certain level point in your life, which is about now, where you're like, I'm really bored of all that crap. And actually, what do I want? I want to like start investing and having some money. So I think there's also like a life cycle, right, in terms of, but which is unfortunate, because if you put money away in your 20s, if I'd have, you know, been investing what I'm investing now, then I'd be a lot richer.
But I think you're right. There definitely is a life stage where you reach that point and you think, I'm halfway.
You've got to live your life.
I'm halfway.
Halfway. Oh, my goodness.
Ooh, if I'm lucky.
Tamara, what's the point when we should start looking at this seriously? Is it in our 20s, 30s, 40s? I always say this thing about, if you start your pension in your 20s, you put as much into it as you do after that. Is it ever too late?
I don't think it's ever too late. I think it depends where you want to focus your efforts and your returns. Because as I said, I'm an entrepreneur, so I was like, that's my focus, you know, very similarly. You know, that's where I'm going to put all of my available money to make my future there. For other people, they have a career plan, they want to be out earlier and they need to invest in a pension very differently. And I think it's about your personal, you know, what do you want? But I think asking that question is really important of yourself. But I also think, to the point you made earlier, educating particularly women to have financial conversations so they are aware of the possibilities, where they might go, even talking to role models or institutions or advisors to sort of get that advice so they can create those possibilities for what they want.
Just really quickly, I think it's important for us to just break down the investment bit. So for anyone thinking, well, what are we actually talking about? At one level, it's your pension, it's having an ISA. It could then be actually investing in stocks and shares, which has its own risk profile. And now you can do lots of things online. It could be assets, so buying properties. It could be investing in companies. There are lots of ways that you can make your money work for you. You need to be engaged. And the first step is just saving a little bit. So even if it's micro, start doing something and you will see a difference.
That's very good advice, Tamara. Thank you so much for coming. If people want to find out more about the Wealthy Her Network, where should they look?
The Wealthy Her Network online. Just Google and you will find us.
The Fempire Strikes Back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
Now, this week in the news, it was announced that the feminine hygiene market, which for anyone who's like, what is that? That's essentially tampons and pads, is going to reach $42.7 billion by 2022. Emma?
It's not just tampons and pads.
Is it not? What else does it include?
It's all the other stuff that they are marketing. Yeah. So like the washers. I don't know if you remember, somebody came out with a freaking bronzer highlighter for your bits. It's all that stuff. And I don't know how I feel about people making money out. I mean, a large proportion it will be hygiene products, but there's a whole load of other products they're making for us that they think that our vulvas and our vaginas need, and they do not need it.
We are going to be talking to one woman about that now. So one of the things that amused me, and when we were talking about this, is in the feminine hygiene market, does everyone realise, does everyone remember a few months ago when the Gwyneth Paltrow website Goop had to agree a settlement for making unproven scientific claims about its vaginal eggs? Have you seen
what
these?
What were the eggs? Oh, were they the ones that for strengthening your pelvic floor?
But they do work. They do. They strengthen your pelvic floor, but they're apparently Goop was also making lots of other claims about, I don't know, how they probably made it smell of roses or something. I don't know. On the phone to talk to us right now, we have Athena Lamnistos, the CEO of gynecological health charity, the Eve Appeal. Athena, isn't it great that so many people are interested in our vulvas and vaginas? Is it not a good thing?
Well, kind of. Although it's a growing market, as you've said, I'm not sure it's one I'd encourage you to invest in, because essentially We're being marketed a lot of things that are selling shame in a bottle. So feminine hygiene, in inverted commas, I mean, just those words, just those two words. Mm, yeah. Is there a masculine hygiene market?
Oh, good point. No, there is not.
There isn't. And I don't want to stigmatise men's health either, but...
I don't want to either, Athena, but I have come across some penises in my life that could use that market. I'm going to tell you that.
Harriet Minter.
Just to say, smegma is a disease, and there aren't a whole host of products dedicated to keeping, you know, the skin under your under your foreskin clean.
This is very true.
There's a huge range of products that we just don't need that increasingly are being marketed to very young women in very high end packaging and bottles, and we really are being sold in a shame in a bottle and being told that the vagina, which is a self cleaning organ, is the kind of dirtiest place on earth. And this wouldn't be, you know, this wouldn't be so serious were it not for the whole host of issues that surround gynecological health anyway. The shame, the stigma, the kind of internal body shaming about gynecological health. So we know is one of the reasons which has caused, you know, a 20-year low that we're in at the moment in terms of women attending cervical screening. And one of the main reasons that's cited, it's not the only reason by far, but one of the reasons that's cited is people are ashamed of showing their bodies. According to the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, there's been a 500% increase in women wanting labiaplasty. Now, that's because they don't think their vulvas look normal. So the last thing we need, really, is to be told that you need a face mask, I kid you not, for your vulva, an exfoliator. I mean, I sort of cringe at that one. I don't know what's going on down there, that it needs to be scrubbed off. And, you know, body, you know, mist, and douches, just a whole host of things that you really, really don't need.
Well,
it's a growing market.
It is, and I know where some of this is going, because it's one of the things you talked about there is like scrubs and exfoliants. And a few years ago, I was getting kind of regular waxing, and I got ingrowing hairs. And so I would go and get my regular wax, and I'd say to my magician, I'm getting ingrowing hairs. And they'd say, well, there's a cure for that. Here it is. It's a £25 bottle of exfoliant. And so I'd buy that. Didn't really work, but I was ever hopeful. And I realized I was trapped in a cycle whereby I was waxing all this hair off, which was extremely painful and very expensive, not very effective. And then I was getting caught where I was actually doing damage to my body. And then I was spending more money to try and repair that damage.
Yeah, no, indeed. And, you know, the thing is that there are products that you need, and those are the kind of, you know, the obvious ones. And we should call those menstrual products. I mean, just the term feminine hygiene is enough to send you kind of over the edge. And then there are products that you just definitely don't need. And if you want to use them, that's fine. You know, if you feel better using them, or you're particularly conscious of whatever it is, but don't think you need to, and don't think that anyone who sees your body or indeed smells your body needs to be bothered by it. It's not you that's the problem. And it is a really serious issue, and there's just this growing range of products. It's like I almost feel sometimes we've done sort of a very good job of getting people to talk about vaginas and vulvas, and now there's this sort of whole range of things being sold as empowerment, which makes it even worse when it's sold as sort of feminine empowerment.
Athena, is this really new though? So I remember, so it would have been 14 years ago when the first sort of douches and stuff came out, FemiCare and lots of other things, and it was to rebalance the pH within your vagina. And it really was a wave of products that came out under this rebalancing your pH. And then it's moved to, as H has said, actually now people are waxing, you realize that like any other bit of your hair,
it comes, problems.
And so something needs to be done about that. I'm quoting, something needs to be done about that. And so an industry, i.e. the beauty industry, is just thinking about how else it can profiteer off women and women's insecurities. And they know if you create a story of insecurity around it, that you can then sell.
Yeah.
Products.
And isn't that just horrible? So yeah. No, it isn't. Yeah. It isn't new. It is predicted to reach 42.7 billion by 2022. Wow. So it's a growing part of the beauty market. You talked about the goop eggs. The issue with those was they're made of a porous material. So you know, in many ways, you know, they're a kind of they're not a health-giving product to insert into your vagina. They might help with muscle control, but anything that's porous can obviously cause infections, which is not what anybody wants.
Athena, something I learned the other day, I was doing some volunteer work with Bloody Good Period, and I didn't realise that Tampax have a sell-by date. So a lot of the tampons that are on the market have a sell-by date because they use bleach, but also there's chemicals in there that are meant to obviously help us during those times of the month. But actually, because they are chemicals, they need a sell-by date. And I just thought that was absolutely awful that these manufacturers are creating products for us that we are putting in a part of our body which can absorb things, and we've got chemicals in those products.
And imagine not knowing that you were putting something in your mouth.
Or digesting. You think, you know, you take care about what you're eating and what you're putting in your body, not realizing that actually when you're using these products that you think are, you know, just pure materials, then they're not.
And you know,
Athena, how do we address this? What needs to happen in order for us to kind of take back control of this market?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think now everyone knows what kind of normal, in inverted commas, body shaming is, whether it still happens or not, which of course it does. You know, it's the whole kind of too fat, too thin, too curvy, you know, celebrating their curves when that's not what's meant at all. That's kind of accepted as wrong, though, and people acknowledge it. But there's a kind of an internal body shaming that goes on around women's bodies, which is just unacceptable and needs to be called out. So what we need to do is educate women around their bodies, and so that they know what the names of the parts are, that they know things like that you don't have to use vaginal douches or particular cleaning products to keep yourself clean. All you need is water. There's an innovation for you. all you need to do is use water. That's perfect. It is a self-cleaning organ, and you need to get wise about what real empowerment is. There's a huge issue around, I mean, this whole issue of am I normal? Is my vulva normal? You know, a lot of women don't know what their own vulva looks like, and there's a huge variation in what vulvas look like. There's a fantastic book that was published earlier on this year called Womanhood, which is really groundbreaking, I think, in the way that it shows women's bodies with a real female gaze. It's not, you know, you just don't see vulvas like that, you know, in that kind of photographed in a very naturalistic way, and then stories about each of those women. And you know, you normally see, if you're seeing women's bodies like that, you're seeing them through the lens of porn, or you know, and you're not seeing a normal body. And so you need to know what you look like and what you feel like. So if you can't spot your own normal, how can you spot what isn't normal? So that's one very, very important message. And then if you have got, I mean, what is heartbreaking for us, and it is so heartbreaking, is when we hear about a woman being diagnosed of vulval cancer after sometimes it's 6, 7, 8 years of intense itching and vaginal discomfort. And they've basically been disguising their symptoms by using things like feminine care products instead of actually getting themselves to the doctor and asking, is it normal that I've got this? And quite often it's not. I mean, quite often it isn't vulval cancer, but in a tragic number of cases it is. And yet they've been disguising the symptoms as those sort of feminine itching, in inverted commas, is a normal thing. It's not, and it may not be thrush. So much is sort of, you know, oh, it's probably thrush. But, you know, there are lots of things you can do. One of the things, we're running this campaign at the moment called Get Lippy, and it's very literal. It's Get a Lip product that's supporting the campaign in May, and Get Lippy as in speak openly and out about the issues. And what's very important there is to normalise the conversation about so many of these things. And when you do that, it takes the fear out of it, really, and it enables you to ask questions that you haven't asked before and ask them of the right people. And we produce these Get Lippy tips, which are for women. We produce them in association with doctors and patients, and they're for women to sort of help them when they go to the doctor to have a good conversation with them. And one of the things that we tell women to do is let the doctor know you really don't mind being examined, because that quite often, if you present with something like, oh, I've got strange discharge, you know, and yes, I did just say discharge, you know, which makes a lot of people kind of startle, the doctor doesn't examine them because on both sides they're thinking, oh, there's embarrassment around this and it's not what she would want. Well, if you don't mind, say that it is. And then you're going to get to the crux of the matter much more quickly.
Athena, thank you so much for joining us. Before you go, I just want to ask you about one new femcare product that has hit the market, which is Day, a startup developing a new type of tampon that is going to infuse the tampon with CBD oil in order to help period cramps. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, as we were just saying about chemicals, it's a very direct way into your body in terms of absorption. I mean, there are lots of ways of absorbing things into your body. It may be something that helps some people. I mean, you know, by and large, I think just be very careful about what you're putting into your body, and really only do it if that seems like you know, the best way for you. What's very exciting about that mechanism is if we can develop screening tests that use something as simple as a tampon, which is something that as a research charity we would really like to see, because that's something that's very acceptable to not all women, but a lot of women are very comfortable using tampons now. And if we can, you know, it's almost the reverse, isn't it? If we can use that as a way of detecting diseases, that would be absolutely fantastic. I don't know if you saw recently, mm-hmm. there's developments around being able to detect HPV from urine samples, which, you know, is nowhere near going into screening yet. But that would be, again, you know, doing a urine test is very acceptable to people. And that's what we're striving for, being able to detect gynecological diseases without, you know, something that's less acceptable.
Athena, thank you so much for joining us. Athena Lamnissos, CEO of the Eve Appeal. Their Get Lippy campaign is running at the moment. If you want to see me talking about the importance of the word vulva, it's on my Instagram for a minute. Go look, have a look at it at Harriet Minter. They're doing brilliant work. 1, 2, 3, 4!
This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton. If you want to hear more from us, you can come follow us on social media at Badass Women's Hour, HR, or leave us a review and tell us how much you love us. We really need to feel the love. 5 stars should do it.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.